Still those easterly winds continuing to blow. It'll be a bit cooler again. Temperatures 10, 11 degrees Celsius or so. For Northern Ireland, a cold start to the morning with a few patches of frost first thing, but plenty of sunshine here and staying dry throughout. Temperatures 13 Celsius. The mainland of Scotland also a cold start to the morning. Fog clearing, plenty of sunshine. The one exception, though, will be across the northwest of Scotland, where a weather front will threaten a few spots of rain to the northern and western isles. Top temperatures, well, around Glasgow, we could see highs of 15 degrees. That's the latest weather. Zeb.
Thanks very much, Chris. Well, now our book of the week here on Radio 4. Dejan Sujic, the director of the Design Museum in London, reads some final extracts from his new book, B is for Bauhaus.
B is for Bauhaus is a look at the modern world through the meanings of objects. Today we look at what we mean by good design, digital switches, and anonymous objects. W is for war. In 2012, the Design Museum acquired an AK-47, the notorious assault rifle developed in 1947 in the Soviet Union. It was a decision that attracted some hostile questions. Weapons do not form part of most museum design collections, a reflection perhaps of the continuing persistence of the concepts of good and bad design. An assault rifle, that is, one designed to be used in combat at close quarters, may be robust, reliable, easy and economical to mass produce. It may, by those definitions, represent functionalism of a high order. It is an object that has shaped history. It has appeared on the national flag of Mozambique and has represented considerable technical innovation. And there are not so many other industrially made objects that have been in continuous production since 1947. Evil or not, it's hard to deny that the AK-47 is a piece of successful design. Weapons are not to be glorified or made a fetish of, but they can offer important insights into other objects. They represent an argument about the nature of objects. To be significant, design does not have to be good design in either of its two most commonly understood meanings, neither morally virtuous nor fit for purpose. The Spitfire is a rather less contentious piece of design, most likely because of its decisive role in the defence of democratic Britain against totalitarian aggression. It combined multiple technical innovations with a refined beauty in the way in which its wings were integrated with the body of the aircraft. The paradox that any analysis of design has to deal with is that so many key developments in technology and design have depended on the accelerated investment that war brings with it. The jet engine was brought forward by the Second World War. The fact that there is any kind of prophylactic against malaria is an outcome of the wars Britain and America fought in the mosquito-infested jungles of Southeast Asia. The internet is now a civilian system based on the planning for distributed military communication systems that could survive atomic warfare. At the end of his long life, Mikhail Kalashnikov himself began to feel a sense of guilt and doubt about the malign impact of his design. His priest suggested to him that there was no shame in creating a weapon to defend the motherland. What he did not say was that there is no clear division between military and non-military development. That is why the AK-47 can be read as a highly significant piece of industrial design with multiple meanings. Y is for YouTube. Shortly after Chad Hurley graduated in 1999, he drew a not especially inspiring logo for a new online finance business known as PayPal. He used an italic sans-serif font rendered in blue on white. As a design student, he had been fascinated by the potential of the new hypertext HTML computer language and taught himself to write code. He did classes in art and technology and in building three-dimensional models for the web. They gave him the creative equipment to become a very successful example of a new version of designer, one who dealt in the non-physical world as much as the physical one. His first really significant piece of work wasn't PayPal's logo, but its payment button, a one-click way of transferring money for safekeeping until the vendor's goods had reached the purchaser. It was a device that worked so well in making eBay a success that eBay bought the whole company for $1.5 billion. It's a button that manifests itself as nothing more than a glowing image on a screen, but it represents a far more complex set of mechanical and formal issues than any door handle, keyboard, or switch. And the PayPal button was perhaps the most valuable switch ever made. 3 years later, Hurley designed something even more valuable. With two former colleagues, he produced a way of sharing videos. It could handle those created on mobile phones, which made it particularly attractive. It was called YouTube. In the 70s, the appearance of the first video cameras aimed at non-specialists was embraced by a generation of radicals as the means by which the grip of big media would be broken, giving ordinary people a chance to reflect their own lives and experiences. It was a vain hope. Crudely edited community video channels were never any threat to the corporations. At first, YouTube looked like something entirely different. But within weeks of its launch, some YouTube uploads had been viewed by millions. Almost immediately, it became a massively influential alternative to every TV network in the world. It was the medium in which music careers were launched, news was broken, terrorist threats were delivered, Holocaust deniers spread their venom, and kittens danced. Every hour, months of content are uploaded to YouTube, so much material that nobody could ever see even a fraction of it in a single lifetime. It has created something analogous to the storerooms of a major museum on a vast scale. In its raw state, it makes no sense, it has no meaning, there is no way of seeing or understanding it. There is no YouTube catalogue. YouTube makes sense of content through the relentless driver of popularity. It is the most viewed clips that rise to the top of the search engines and so reinforce their positions. It is a phenomenon that runs counter to the notional democracy of YouTube. If the images are not at the top of the tree, they become invisible, and the culture of YouTube is tilted irreversibly in directions that tend to reinforce existing tastes rather than challenge them. Z is for zip. One important way of thinking about design is to concentrate on the ordinary and the anonymous as distinct from the artful and the self-conscious. It is to rebuke those who try to chart design through the biographies of celebrities and a procession of attention-grabbing sculptural objects. Looking at anonymous design is a way to understand the contribution made by those who might not describe themselves as designers, but have nevertheless had a crucial impact on the world of things. Yet the designer's signature, or what might be called brand, has been an essential accompaniment to the development of contemporary design. It is a phenomenon that has become more and more unappetizing, just as it has become inescapable. This is not a recent phenomenon. Josiah Wedgwood played his part in shaping the contemporary practice of design when he created a market for ceramic products that carried his company's brand. The zip has a complex story. Gideon Sundback, a Swedish-American inventor, filed a patent for the hookless fastener number 2 with the US Patent Office in 1914. His work was a refinement of an idea for a fastener based on interlocking teeth that had been circulating among engineers for decades. Before Sundback, no one had managed to get the zip quite right. The hooks were either too weak to hold two surfaces together, or they wore out too soon to be useful. Sundback designed a needle-like projection on the top of each nib and put a dent in the corresponding position on the underside of the tooth, which held them all firmly in place. Even if one of the row of teeth came apart, the rest were still locked in. The first customer for the new product was B.F. Goodrich, which started manufacturing rubber overshoes with a zip fastener in 1923. The zip turned putting them on and taking them off into a single, quick movement. By the 1930s, the zip was an essential sign of modernity. It was adopted by anyone in too much of a hurry to put up with the archaic customs of buttons. The distinctions of class and gender that buttons inevitably smuggle into almost any garment, depending on whether they are to the left or the right, precious metal, simple bone, or cloth-covered, were made redundant by the zip. The workmanlike, no-nonsense, unfussy zip became the sign of the organized proletariat, or those who wanted to be identified with it. Military uniforms started to adopt zips. The parka and the flying suit depended on them, as did the leather biker's jacket. The zip could be positioned diagonally, like a lightning flash across the chest, as it appeared on Dandare's spacesuit, and added as a decorative flourish in entirely unnecessary places. Most highly charged in its symbolism is the use of the zip in place of fly buttons for trousers. Introduced after centuries of buttons, despite the risk of serious damage if incautiously raised, the zip was seen as a signal of shifting messages of sexual availability. It was celebrated by Erika Jong and deployed on Sticky Fingers, the Andy Warhol-designed Rolling Stones album cover. Understanding the nature of an anonymous, industrially made object has become a recurring preoccupation of design curators around the world. They bring together collections of paperclips and ballpoint pens, post-it notes and clothes pegs, and all the other humble masterpieces, as they are often called, chosen for their simplicity and fitness for purpose. Or, as in the case of the glove developed especially for shucking oysters, for the ingenuity that goes into problem-solving for very specific tasks. Putting such objects in museums can be traced to Bernard Rudofsky, a critic and curator whose best-known project was Architecture Without Architects at the Museum of Modern Art in 1964. He was fascinated by designs which, though conceived without the involvement of an architect, had aesthetic qualities that they could not match. He went further than looking at vernacular buildings and the nonchalant way that they dealt with such issues as climate control, which cause our energy-greedy era so much grief. With a gently mocking eye, Rudofsky started questioning contemporary conventions about every aspect of daily life. He explored the underlying assumptions of how we eat, how we bathe, and how we sit. Anonymous design, or design without designers, might be understood in much the same way. It may be impossible to be precise about assigning the zip to the name of any one designer, but there can be no doubt that it is one of the many design innovations that defined the 20th century. Some objects in this category are the product of better-known individuals. The Tetra Pak, for example, developed by Ruben Rausing and Eric Vallenberg. Tetra Pak played a significant part in changing the way a generation of Japanese looked by making milk a part of the country's staple diet in the 1970s. It was another piece of low-tech innovation, the sea container, that transformed not just the shipping industry, but the docks that accommodated it and the port cities that depended on them, and so the world. Shipping containers demanded bigger ships and big open-air docks. As a result, London's upstream docks closed and within 2 decades were cleared to create the new financial district of Canary Wharf. By inviting us to examine objects that have become so familiar that they have disappeared from our conscious attention, we are being presented with a way to find what really drives design. It is an effective way to address the tension between the myth-making version of design and the reality of step-by-step refinements, between the cult of the individual genius and the way in which enterprises are driven by teams and groups. There is no styling or egotism to a safety pin or a paperclip. They are as simple and as universal as a reef knot. The comparison between the modesty of anonymous production and the brittle egotism of signature design is apparently about reclaiming design from superficial styling and celebrity. But anonymous design is still the product of individuals and individual decisions, and the zip retains its sense of design outside time. Velcro might be taking its place for some uses, but the zip, after more than a century, is still a small marvel.
Dejan Sujic was reading from his new book, B is for Bauhaus. The book was abridged by Polly Coles, produced by Clive Brill, and is a Pacificus production for BBC Radio 4. In a moment, the late-night shipping forecast, and to take us safely there, here's Sailing By.